I call your attention to the Old Testament today. I want you to go to the book of 2 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 13. There's a man that is the king in this story, and the man's name is Joash. You read about him in verse 14 in our passage. There's other passages about him. But you also come to another name in the end of the chapter in verse 25, and I'm just giving you this for your own personal edification. And it's Jehoash. Joash, Jehoash are the exact same person. I want you to remember that. You say, well, why would they do that? I don't know. Why do some documents that get mailed to my house have Thomas on them? And why do some of them have Tommy on them? And why do some of them have Tom on them? And why do some of them have TR on them? I have no idea what the rhyme or reason is, but these two names are the exact same person. Remember that as we go through our text today. Also, there is another Joash in the Bible. And I don't want you to get confused. Their times when they reign overlapped a little bit. But there is one Joash that is the king of Judah. This Joash is the king of Israel. Israel and Judah are not the same thing. What happened is after Solomon died, the kingdom of Israel split. It's called the divided kingdom. You had the north, which became known as Israel, and you had the south, which became known as Judah. And so you had Judah kings, Israel kings. This is an Israel king, not to be confused with the Judah king, both of them named Joash. And so I want you to think about this story today. This is a story that I have loved for many reasons. It is a story that has been a personal challenge to me. I will probably tell you a part of an experience that I had when I get to one part of it. But this is a great passage for all of us. Every single person that is seated here this morning. I don't care if you're 16 or if you're 96. This is for you today. The title of the message is Three Arrows or Six. Three Arrows or Six. I want you to look with me beginning in verse 14. It says, now Elisha was fallen sick of his sickness whereof he died. The first thing that I want you to see today is I want you to see the chariot of Israel. Now you say, wait a minute now, you just got finished reading about a man named Elisha, and now you're wanting to talk about a chariot of Israel? It's the exact same personage. Now the word chariot has the idea of strength. It has the idea of an army that is invincible. You remember several times in the Old Testament, especially in like the book of like Joshua, the book of Judges, some in Samuel. You will read about those that had chariots. They were a feared group of people. And so when you read verse 14 and it says that he has died, and at the end of the verse it talks about the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof, it has the idea that this man had a special place in the eyes of the people of God. Now this is not the first time that this phrase is used for a prophet of God. We'll not take time to it, but if you're taking notes, if you would write down chapter 2 of 2 Kings, what you will find is you will find that this exact phrase is used with Elisha's predecessor, Elijah. He is called the Chariot of Israel. In other words, during the time that Elijah was living, people looked at him as not a prophet of God, but as the prophet of God. When Elijah spoke, those that feared Jehovah listened. But Elijah was taken into heaven. A whirlwind came along, a chariot from the Lord came, picked him up, and he went to heaven without dying. That's why one of the witnesses in the book of the Revelation is most likely going to be Elijah. I don't know of any conservative scholar or commentator that does not think that Elijah will not be one of those two witnesses in the book of Revelation. Now, the other one varies. Some people think that it was Enoch. Some people think it's Moses. I don't really know, and nobody else does either. But I know that Elijah was a special man of God. As a matter of fact, when Jesus was on the Mount of Transfiguration, and he took the inner circle up, when Jesus was there, the Shekinah glory of God fell, and you had Elijah and you had Moses that also came. And Peter goes, let's just stay here. Let's just build three tabernacles here. Let's just do that. And then all of a sudden, when he began to equate Moses and Elijah, those two were gone, and it was just Jesus that was there. But Elijah was a special, special prophet of God. When you read through the life of Elijah, you find that he had 8 major miracles. But he died, just like our text tells us that Elisha is about to die. Now, one of the things that Elisha asked was, Lord, he actually asked his Lord Elijah, he said, when you die, what would you like for me, or what would you ask of me, and maybe I can give that to you. He said, I would like to have a double portion of the power of God that you had in your life. Now, when you read the life of Elisha, you do not find that he had 8 major miracles. You find that he had 15. You say, well, that's not a double portion. In a little bit, you're going to see a miracle that happened after he died. You're going to see a miracle that made number 16. And I want to tie all of this in to you and me, how that no matter what age we are, all of us can give it all to God. And so it tells us that he has fallen sick, and this sickness that he has is going to kill him. That means that it's not going to be 6 months, it's not going to be a year, it's not going to be 2 years. He is going to die, and he's going to die soon. Now, one of the things that you will learn if you study the Bible in any depth at all, you will know that there are times when one verse and the next verse has a time gap in it. When you read where we're at today in 2 Kings 13, the last time Elisha is mentioned is back in chapter 9. That was 40 years ago. 40 years ago, and this man of God, what is he doing? He is traveling from Jericho to Gilgal to Bethel to Dothan to all of these various places, and what is he doing? He is a circuit-riding prophet, and he is preaching to a bunch of college kids going to the school of the prophets. The company of men that you read about during his ministry, that is a school of the prophets. And so he not only was the successor and began to do miracle after miracle after miracle with these men that he had learned how to do these things and had the touch of God upon him as his predecessor did, but now 4 decades have passed. He's gone from being a young man in the prime of life. He is now gone to be a senior man, and he has gotten sick, and he's not going to make it. There comes a time in the life of every preacher that if Jesus don't come, you're going to die. Now, I know that there are religious outfits, and they talk about how that if you name it and claim it, you're going to be good. And I saw the other day that one of them had been preaching that for about 40 years. He's about dead. Evidently, naming it and claiming it's not accurate. And so you've got this man of God, and he is about to die. There's a podcast that I listen to. It is a dear preacher. He is like 84 years old. His name is Jack Scallions. Years and years ago, I'm talking about 60 plus years ago, he went to Tennessee Temple up in Chattanooga when Dr. Lee Robertson was the pastor at Highland Park and was the president of Tennessee Temple Schools. Brother Keith went to Tennessee Temple. Miss Kim went to Tennessee Temple. Miss Tammy went to Tennessee Temple. Brother Darrell went to Tennessee Temple. Martha went to Tennessee Temple. And we might have some other people that went, but those are just the ones that came off the top of my head. And so you've got Brother Scallions, and I listened to a podcast that he does, and he doesn't do it often. It's about once every 2 or 3 weeks. And he was talking about how that he went to the doctor, and when he was seated there in the doctor's office, he looked at the doctor and says, "Well, what's the verdict?" He said, "Well, when we've done the scan, it looks as though the cancer has come back." He had been fighting cancer now for 20 years. He had had a couple of heart issues. And he said, "So how much time do I have?" He said, "Well, nobody really knows for sure." He said, "Preacher, but my guess is that you have from 3 to 5 years right now to live." And Jack Scallion made this statement. He said, "It is my prayer, even though my ministry has changed, I'm no longer pastor." He said, "But as long as I have breath, I plan to serve the Lord with every ounce of my being." And when I heard that podcast, my first thought was, I'm preaching on that Sunday. And so you have this man of God, and the king, Joash, has come down to see him. Why did he come? I don't know. Joash is not a believer, not in what I would call a traditional sense of a believer. He followed in the ways of Jeroboam. What did Jeroboam do? Jeroboam let the people of Israel become idol worshipers. He didn't want people to have an allegiance to Jerusalem anymore. And so what he did, he made a capital city, no longer Jerusalem. He made it Samaria in Israel. He went to a place up in the north called Dan, which was the tribe of Dan. You remember me saying this, from Dan to Beersheba? That means from the top to the bottom, the breadth of the land. He went up to Dan, and what did he do? He built a golden calf. He went down to Bethel, which was supposed to be the house of God, and he made another golden calf. Joash was a cow worshiper. He followed in those ways. Elisha was the man of God, and so I don't know if he came, just maybe because of Elisha's name among the people. But I know this, when he got there and he saw the condition that this man of God was in, it says that he wept over his face. So perhaps he did have some affinity for the prophet of God, but it was not much. And so when we see this as he comes, he's coming maybe out of respect. But the main message this morning is our second thing, and that is the commands and the carelessness of this man. Look with me at verse 15. "And Elisha said unto him, Take bow and arrows." Notice the arrows are plural. One bow, but many arrows. He took unto him bows and arrows. The king normally didn't carry that kind of stuff, but he looks around and tells one of his men, let me have your bow. Give me your quiver. And he said unto the king of Israel, put thine hand upon the bow. So if this microphone was a bow, he put his hand on the bow. And he says that Elisha put his hands upon the king's hands. So Joash takes the bow, and then the man of God takes his hand and puts it over Elisha's hand. That is an important thing there, because he is letting him know that he has an opportunity to follow God and to be blessed of God, and God will give Israel victories when it comes to war, because a bow was a weapon of war. Verse 17 says, he said, open the window eastward. When you look at the east in the scriptures, most of the time, it is a place of blessing. It is a place of deliverance. You think about how that where were Adam and Eve? They were in Eden. Sometimes we hear the term East of Eden. In other words, when you go east, where's Jesus coming back? He's coming back from the east. That's why most cemeteries that you go to, if they're Christian cemeteries, they will have their headstones and they're facing to the east. The reason for that is because when he comes back, he's coming back from the eastern sky. When he stands on the Mount of Olives, which I heard Chad allude to as I was shaking my last hands, I heard him say that he's going to come and stand on the Mount of Olives. That's exactly right. And he's going to go through the eastern gate. And so you have the eastward look. Well, where was that? Now, he is in Dothan, not Alabama. He is in Dothan. And he is saying, look out that window eastward. What is east? It is Syria. Now, I want you to remember this. In some commentators, and also probably some of you that don't have a KJV, you may have maybe a more modern version, there's the word that is used instead of Syria, it is Amram or Aram. All right, every time I say Aram, I think about a dear old preacher that went back in the 70s down to or over to Israel, and they had guys that ran the elevators for you. And this old guy and Brother Don was there. Brother Don was young at the time. And this old guy was there. And he got on the elevator and he was trying to make small talk with the elevator operator. And he looked at the guy and he said, are you a Jew or are you an Arab? And the guy goes, I am not an Arab. I'm an Arab. And Brother Don told him, he said, brother, I'm going to tell you right now. He said, he's going to come in. He's going to cut your throat tonight while we're sleeping. He said, that night, he said, we shut the door. So that guy put a chair in front of the door. He put suitcases in front of the door. He wasn't getting slipped up on. But every time I think about Aram, I think about that old preacher. Are you a Jew or an Arab? Well, Aram is Syria. That's the same thing. Just like there's two Joashes, and just like Jehoash is Joash, so you have the same thing that's here. Back to our text. He says, then Elisha said, shoot. And he shot. Now remember, the window is open. He has his hand on the bow. He has his hand here. He's pulled his hand back and he lets it go. And he shoots it eastward. Now, keep reading. And he, Elisha, said, the arrow of the Lord's deliverance. Why is that important? Because Israel had been at war with Syria. The predecessors that Joash had, his father, had had cities that had been taken by the Syrians. And so Syria was constantly coming and trying to take property. They were trying to take these cities and expand their borders. And so he has this in his mind. And so he says, this is the arrow of the Lord's deliverance. It's not your deliverance. God's going to give you deliverance. But now this is what you need to do. He says, thou shalt smite the Syrians in Aphek. Now, what is Aphek? Well, if you go back into 1 Kings, you'll find that there's a battle there, and there's another king of Israel, and his name is Ahab. He's probably the worst of all the kings that you read about in the Bible. He was married to Jezebel. And so he was there, and God gave him a victory at Aphek. I have been to that piece of ground where that battle took place. And so he says that you are to smite the Syrians in Aphek till thou hast consumed them. In other words, you have completely destroyed them. And so he, the prophet of God, said, take the arrows, and he took them. And he said unto the king of Israel, smite upon the ground. And he smote three times, and stayed, or he stopped. So get the picture. The man of God has got his hand on the bow, and they shoot it out the window. And I don't know if they pushed Elisha over to the window so he could look out, but he says, I want you to take those arrows, and I want you to smite the ground. And so the king, what does he do? He takes an arrow, and he hits the ground. And he takes another arrow, and he hits the ground. And he takes another arrow, and he hits the ground. And he stops. That's enough. And when he stops, he's immediately rebuked by the prophet. The man of God was wroth with him and said, thou shouldest have smitten 5 or 6 times. Then thou had smitten Syria till thou had consumed it, whereas now thou shalt smite Syria but 3 times. So in other words, he knew that this was the arrow of the Lord. But yet for some reason, he stopped at 3 instead of using the whole quiverful. About 6 months ago, I was watching one of my favorite sheriffs in the world. Has anybody ever seen Sheriff Grady Judd from Polk County, Florida? Anybody besides me seen Sheriff Grady? All right, about 5 of you that are educated. All right. Sheriff Grady, he runs a tight ship in Polk County, Florida. There was a guy that decided that he was going to shoot it out with the police. He killed a canine unit, which they considered that to be a cop. He shot at others and wounded maybe a couple of them. And he finally was succumbed after about 65 wounds from bullets. And somebody asked Sheriff Grady, they said, do you think that it was necessary to shoot him that many times? Why did you shoot him 65 times? And he said, because we ran out of ammunition. He was using everything that he had. And you know what? That should have been the attitude that Joash had. Now, these guys had been coming, and they had been taking this city and that city and this city and that city. 3 major cities that they took. And yet, when he comes to the man of God, as the man of God is laying on his deathbed, doing his best to serve God with every ounce of energy that he's got left, he says, shoot it eastward. That's where you're going to get victory. Now smite the ground. And he hits it 1, 2, 3 times with those 3 arrows, when it should have been the whole quiver. There should have been at least 5 smites of the ground. Now, people often ask, they say, well, why do you think that number was significant? Because God expects our absolute obedience. I believe that when we come as believers and we say, Lord, take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, today. I believe God expects that to be all of us. And when I say all of us, I'm not talking about numerically all of us. I'm talking about all of me, and you ought to be thinking all of you. You say, now, wait a minute, preacher. I served God when I was 40, but I'm 70 now. I can't do it. I understand that things change. But I also understand that just like Jack Scallion, we ought to serve God until the day we die. You don't know Randy Collins. There's not a person in here that knows him. My wife only knows his name. But Randy Collins and I were friends, and we became good friends 3 years ago. He and I were in the same youth group in Savannah, Georgia. He never acknowledged the call to preach one day in his life. But he loved God, and he loved the Bible Baptist Church. His mother was I think all of his people are gone now. She was a big gal. But that gal could sing. I mean, if you've ever heard anybody say, it ain't over till the fat lady sings, well, it would have been over when Miss Ethel got finished singing, because she was big. She's an 18-wheeler. Randy was her boy. She had a daughter, and that girl, she could sing too. But Randy loved singing. And as a 17-year-old boy, he got in the choir at Bible Baptist. When all of us that had been called to preach, when we went off to Bible college, he stayed and he sang in the choir. He came to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. And every time the choir met, he was in the choir. He never one time sang a solo, not one. When he got married, his wife got in the choir. When he got a job, and it was a career job, he still was faithful to church. He still sang in the choir. Fast forward 50 years. From the time he was 17 until now, he is 67. He has been in his seat in the choir at the Bible Baptist Church in Savannah, Georgia. He calls me up and he says, Tommy, this is Randy. Hey, man, how you doing? I'm doing good. God's good. He said, I want you to pray for me. He said, I got cancer. I said, okay. We actually put him on our prayer bulletin for a while. He was on the prayer list here at the church. And so about once a week, my phone would ring sometime 9, 10 o'clock at night. And it would be him. I'd see his name pop. I've got about 1,400 names in my phone. And your name's probably there. If it's not, you better leave a message because you might not get a call back. But Randy's name would pop and I would pick it up and he would say, how you doing, brother? Man, I'm doing good. Well, how's your wife doing? Oh, Deb's getting better. She's getting better all the time. And he would say, well, I still love the Lord. I said, how's your treatments going? Well, sometimes they're hard. He said, but I'm okay. For 3 years, while he's battling cancer, he was in the choir. And he died. 50 years. 50 years. He sat in his place serving God. Can I tell you, he was a six arrow choir member. I had Amala this week. Actually, I guess Will probably was the one that kind of did most of it. I gave her some 3.5-inch floppies. They're not really floppy. They're 3.5-inch stiff plastic. But those of you that are old, you remember back in the day. And these young kids, they don't even have a clue what a 5.25 floppy is or a 3.5-inch floppy. All right? So, I had some old 3.5-inch floppies, and I couldn't open them up. It was just garbled whenever it would come up. And so he was able to somehow do something, and he was able to get that. And I was looking through some of those this week after Amala emailed them to me. And there was a teacher that popped. Her name was Betty Locklear. I had not thought about Miss Betty probably in a year. But for 31 years, she taught the third and the fourth grade girls class at this church. We would try to give her assistance to help her. And the assistants would go in there, but if those assistants did not do it exactly the way that Miss Betty wanted, she'd kick them out. These are my girls. These are girls that God's given me to train. And she took that job dead dog serious. I was thinking about some of the kids that came through her class, that third and fourth grade girls class. Amanda went through that class. Yeah, Emily went to it too. I guarantee you, I have never, in the years that I've been here, have ever had anybody that is called from like, Brother Tom, this is so-and-so from 40 years ago. Can you tell me something about Miss Betty Locklear? I've had that numerous times. Why is that? Because she was a six-arrow teacher. She didn't just do enough to get by. Oh, no. Now, here you've got this king. And what is he doing? He is doing as little as he can do. But can I tell you that sometimes we just get lazy? Man, I'm 70. Man, I don't need to do that anymore. Yeah, you do. Are you on your deathbed? Elisha was. Now, let me ask you a question. You say, I'm not talented. I don't have certain gifts. I don't have certain abilities. Let me ask you a question. If I gave you a bow and arrow, and I put my hand on that bow with you, and I said, all right, pull it and shoot it. I bet you a dollar to a donut you could do that. Now, let me ask you something else. If I gave you a handful of arrows, and I said, I want you to take those arrows, and I want you to hit the ground with it, could you do that? I didn't say hit a bullseye from 50 yards. No. Can you hit the ground with the arrow that's in your hand? That's all you got to do. But the problem is, Joash said, well, 1, 2, 3, I'm done. Why? I don't know. Maybe it was pride. Maybe he decided that he, I'm the king. I mean, after all, I don't have to really shoot bows and arrows, and I don't have to throw spears. I don't have to do any of that. I got these boys to do it. But that was not what the prophet, through the word of God, had told him to do. He said, smite the ground. This is the arrow of the Lord for deliverance. And so, if you can take an arrow and you can hit the ground, you can serve the Lord until you draw your last breath. You say, well, I can't do what I used to. Who can? But you can give it everything you got right now. Can I tell you that if there is a 65-year-old man in this building, and I take you out, to the ball field, and I say, what we're going to do is we're going to weed eat this ball field. And then I take a 20-year-old. I thought about this. Old Jaden's sitting back there in the back. Jaden comes over to our house sometimes and works for us. My wife will inform me, Jaden's coming. Get some money. And whenever he comes, usually one of the things we'll do is if I've not got around to weed eating, I'll let him do some weed eating. And then he and I'll work on a trailer. He and I'll do something. But anyway, but he's like an 18-year-old kid. And I'm huffing and puffing after 15 minutes of slinging a weed eater. He's out there like the Energizer Bunny. I cannot do the amount of weed eating as quickly as he can do it. Why? Because I'm 70 and he's 18. But by the same token, I've been saved since 1972. He's only been saved for a few years. Can I tell you that my prayer life ought to be a 6-hour prayer life and his may only be a 3, but his could be a 6. It just won't be as deep as mine should be if I've been a 6-hour Christian my whole life. I don't expect anybody in this auditorium, with the exception of maybe a couple, to have any more biblical knowledge of the Word of God than I do. Now, we've had some lay people that have been, you know, stout. I mean, when you walk in, you better have something because they're going to call you on it. We had a lady named Eloise Tidwell years ago, and she was one of those. And she heard a preacher preach one time, and he was preaching on, gird up the lions of your mouth. You know, gird up the lions. Gird up, get those lions. You got this lion, and you got that lion. And finally, she went up to him at the end of the service and said, preacher, that was a wonderful message, but that word's not lions, it's loins. You gird up your loins, not the lions. When you're a preacher, you got to be aware of that. There's some people out there that'll catch you. And so you've got this king, and he could have had complete victory, but he did not because he was lazy. He did not maybe even believe. Remember, he's a cow worshiper. Third thing, real quick. I want you to see some continuing influence. This is the story of his 16th miracle. Look at verse 20. Elisha died, and they buried him. And the bands, not the Beatles, all right? The bands is the marauding army, some type of platoon or something. The bands are the little small platoon of the Moabites invaded the land at the coming end of the year. That means it was harvest time. One of the things that the Philistines would do, Moabites would also do it, they would let the people of God, they would let them cultivate the land, plant the land, till the land, seed the land, fertilize the land. Then when the harvest came in, they would come in and kill the people of God or run them off and take the crop. That's why in the book of Judges, you've got one of those judges, and he said, you're not getting my pea patch. And he was one of the ones that delivered in the book of Judges. These Moabites come in, and what has happened? Verse 21 tells us, it says, as they were burying a man, behold, they spied a band of men. In other words, this was an ongoing thing. They knew that things like this would happen, but they had one of their own die. And as they're burying him, most likely putting him into a cave, one of them says, you got to hurry, boys. You got to hurry. The Moabites are coming. They're going to kill us or hurt us. You got to hurry. And so they're dead, buddy. They go, sorry, Tom, but we ain't got time to give you a good burial today. Here you go. And into that cave they throw him. Maybe we can come back later and do it official, but we got to get this over. So they toss him into that cave. Elisha has been buried in that cave. And when that body that is tossed in there touches the body of Elisha, years later, that man comes back to life. I remember reading this story as a senior in high school. I was in South Carolina, over near Augusta, and there was a camp that we rented out called the Piney Heights Camp. Bill Reese was the pastor there at the time, and, And we rented that camp out, and that's where we had football camp my senior year in high school. So I'm reading my Bible every day, and all of a sudden on a Wednesday, I'm reading this story in 2 Kings 13, and I'm thinking, man, that is an awesome story right there. That night, we go to church. The preacher, Brother Bill Reese, opens up his Bible and preaches from this text. And in my mind, I'm going, wow, I just read that today. Isn't that cool what God just did? This man comes back to life. He revives. And now the double portion that Elisha wanted, he got it. Now, what's some takeaways real quick? Pay close attention to the Word of God. Was that not the arrow of the Lord's deliverance? Can I tell you that when God speaks in His Word, you can trust it? We don't need to act like a bunch of cow worshipers. We need to say we're Bible believers. The Word of God is trustworthy. It is sufficient. It is infallible. It is inerrant. It has everything that you and I need as far as direction in our lives. He did not pay attention to the words from the man of God when the man of God said, "This is the arrow of deliverance. It's from the Lord." Went in one ear and out the other. He was a three-arrow man instead of a six-arrow man. Not only that, there's no place to stop until God says stop. How does God say stop? He takes you to glory. That's how. And then the last thing, if we have stopped, and sometimes we do. Sometimes we do. This week, I was at a board meeting, and there was a dear preacher that was there. And in my heart, I'm thinking, he's that close to calling it quits. That close to calling it quits. He's been pastoring a nice church. It's always been a small church, but he's been pastoring that church for several years now. Just never able to kind of get it going like he wanted it. And he's trying to have a revival. And he said, "Brother Tom, I need you to pray for me and I need you to pray for our church." He said, "I'm trying to have a revival." And he said, "Last night," he said, "I had 15 people show up." He said, "We took an offering to try to give to the visiting evangelist." He said, "We got $12 in the offering. We spend more than that at McDonald's." When I heard him say that, my heart went out to him. And I know that he and his wife have got to be carrying just a massive, massive load. And I've prayed for him every day since Thursday when he shared that with me. But I know this. I know that just because his church is struggling and just because he's having the very life sucked out of him, he doesn't get to quit. He does not get to quit. No matter what happens, you don't get to quit. You need to be a Randy Collins. You need to be a Betty Locklear. You don't quit no matter what happens. Why? Because as I wrote in the Friday Blast, we endure hardness as a good soldier. And so, the question is this. Are you a three-arrow believer? Are you a six-arrow believer? Are you going to be one of those Christians that just walk a mile and go, "All right, I've carried that backpack. Now you carry it the rest of the way." Or are we going to be like Jesus said, if he compels you to go 1 mile, go two. Why? Because the testimony of Jesus is at stake. I implore you this morning, be a six-arrow Christian.